And welcome to the Rock and Roll Survivors Podcast, dedicated to those in front of the curtain, behind the curtain, and somewhere in between. So let's get started. Continue, because the next part of the article, all of this really caught my attention, because to me this article is almost a time capsule, because but I also love comparing it to all the stories you've been telling us, because again, this journalist really picked up on it. So she writes, quote, "The girls began teaching themselves and each to play these instruments, so teaching themselves and each other to play these instruments only a year ago. Their first record was released this week on the Hideout label, entitled Never Thought You'd Leave Me and What a Way to Die." So there she is already talking about the fact that she understands how quickly this magical ride happened for the Pleasure Seekers. And again, that you were getting recognition. It wasn't because you were token girls.
Right, right. The Detroit press was pretty quick to pick up on what was happening in the city. Mm-hmm. I mean, my God, we already had Motown there and Golden World and everything. So this new rock was getting their attention, a lot of journalists. So I'm not surprised she picked up on that. She knew what she was doing.
I think that, you know, you just said something that is almost, well, it's brilliant, but it's almost so obvious that it needs to be repeated, which is, Detroit already at that moment in time was on the rise musically. So of course there would be music journalists there and understanding what was happening within the city and the rejection of the car industry or the embracing of the car industry. So that the journalists were more sophisticated, if you will, about mm-hmm. there. And so that even underlines or underscores even more that they recognized how good the pleasure seekers was at the time.
No, you're talking about a generality of Detroit. It's Detroit. Everyone was invested in their city. Detroit was a cool city, from the journalists to the the motor car people, whatever it was, teen bands, rock music. Everybody loved their city. There's a real sense of Detroit pride. So I'm not surprised the press were the same. That's Detroit.
It's Detroit, but again, Detroit is savvy. They might
Yeah,
be pri
very,
very
very.
proud of their city, but they're not going to just accept anything. So,
No, oh no, no,
and
no.
that's what I mean about the pleasure seekers. This wasn't just a token, let's pat you on the head because we've never seen this before. Not at
No.
quite the contrary. Well, here's a part of the another part of the article that really intrigued me because, Patty, you tend to be so humble about yourself, your brilliance, your ingenuity, your musical talents. I could go on and on, because you do tend to recognize that there is a larger history to contextualize this amazing story, and that it's not just one person's narrative, although we can tell your story, but I love the way you overlay it into the larger history. And so with this said, the writer, though, names two singles that have just been released. Again, we said, "Never thought you'd leave me," and What a Way to Die. And she writes that, quote, words for the first single, Never Thought You'd Leave Me, were written by Pat Quattro with music by Dave Leone, owner of The Hideout. And then she adds, who also wrote words and music for the latter song, close quote. So I want you to clarify all of this. Did you, Pat, write the lyrics for Never Thought You'd Leave Me?
No. I'm telling you, it drives me crazy, all the misinformation that gets cut and pasted through the years online, in press articles, in interviews. It could drive you nuts. And you can't
Well, wait,
put it
wait, wait.
off.
Hold on, hold on. Before you go on, though, this was February of 1966, and you clearly conducted an interview with her because she quotes you.
Yes.
So
No, but I no. The band, he brought the framework of the two songs, a lot of lyrics on a sheet and stuff. And then we started rehearsing. We helped collaborate on it with the words, finishing it. We did the music to it, put it together, added the ideas, Mary Lou and her scream, and blah, blah, blah. So it really ended up being a collaboration in the end. But Dave did have the framework of lyrics on a sheet for both songs. So
okay, I will.
that was misinformation on the interviewer's part. She got it wrong.
So that's not you being humble, Patty, in this case.
No. Got to give Dave his due.
And also the pleasure seekers their due, because you did
Yes,
co-write it with them.
it was
But all of
collaborative.
them. Well, another part of the article, again, written in 1966, that Mary Joan Schmidt focused on was she gave an entire paragraph dedicated to the Quattro family. And it reads, quote, music runs in the Quattro family with father Arthur and brother Mickey, both working as professional musicians. And then she quotes you, Patty, is saying, all of our parents love the idea of our working together, said Pat, group leader and spokesman. And then you add, we definitely plan to stay together and make a career of music, she added, meaning you. And I find this part of the article fascinating because, first of all, you can feel your determination. You also can feel that the writer understands your musical legacy. But it really, to me, underscores the idea of what we were talking about in the last couple episodes about the pleasure seekers really wanting to seize the day, your ferocity in wanting to make this happen. And as you said in the last episode, that you just, regardless of the shakeup, you were going to continue on. And that comes through as 17-year-old Patty being the spokesperson for the band. So I'd love your thoughts on that.
Well, it's interesting because I was slated to go to college with my little all A persona and linguist and blah, blah, blah to U of M with Nan. And by then, it was evident that I was fully engaged, cocked, locked, and ready to rock. And it was becoming very serious, Patty, to me, that this could be a different route that I was going to take. And we were getting booked so quickly, and the momentum was coming. And The changing lineups never made me want to stop. I mean, it was not going to stop me. And same with Nan and Susie. They felt the same. They felt strong. I was more serious about it. My little, I don't know how to put it, Gestapo personality. But anyway.
Well, you were the one who had your epiphany at the Beatles. I think your intensity is completely acceptable to that. Absolutely. Well, the article goes on to read, quote, "Most of their playing is done on weekends at fraternity parties and afternoon get-togethers at the University of Michigan," which, as you said, that's where Nan was at that point. And I guess her boyfriend, Iggy Pop, was there at this, not at the college, but there in Ann Arbor. And they have, the article goes on to say, they have also appeared at a CKLA record hop at Riverside with Paul Revere and the Raiders, and at WXYZ Goodfellows Dance at Notre Dame High with Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels, close quote. Now, I have many more questions, and the article does go on, but there is a few of these sentences that I need to hear from you on. So, tell us about appearing at a record hop, whatever it's called, with Paul Revere and the Raiders. And remember, you're all new at this point.
Oh yeah. Well, they were already famous, Paul Revere, he had a hit record and everything. And I remember we were on the bills with so many known rock bands internationally. And if I said the list, we'd be sitting here for an hour. How many people we played with. It was just endless through the decade. But back to Paul Revere, I remember he came, he was great. We have pictures of them at the Rooster Tail where they were in town, and they came to see us perform again. And we have all the pictures up. We'll put them up later, I'm sure, on one of
Definitely
the
put him up.
episodes. But they were great. They were great. They put on a good show, and we opened for them, I'm sure. And it was a dance hop thing,
Well,
CKLW.
they came to see you, but did you hang out with them? Any stories?
We hung out at the Rooster Tail. We were blabbing away between our set and stuff. They had a big table with all of them. Oh, Susie had to wear a blonde wig. That was a time when she had to fake her age because it was a over 21 place. That was the whole thing. Whole thing, yeah.
Well, and on a side note, we have mentioned this a couple of times, but in this context, Patty, you had an incredible talent for forging IDs. So.
Yes. Oh my God. I did. I made ID for everybody. I was good at it.
You had to get into the clubs and hang out with people like Paul
Yeah.
Revere and the Raiders.
Like me, say to you, help me do, I'll be true. And what I'd like for you to say is you'll come home to me each day. Oh, you'll be my girl, that's what I want. Just you, sweet girl, not a front. It's just like me, I feel so blue, and I fall so much in love with you.
Well, the other band that was mentioned in this article, besides Paul Revere and the Raiders, was none other than Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels, that said that you played together at a high school dance at Notre Dame. So tell us about this gig. How did this happen? You've mentioned before that Mitch Ryder was a little bit older than you teens, and so he probably didn't play at the Hideout, but we're now not at the Hideout. We're now, you're playing everywhere. So what was this high school dance like, playing with Mitch Ryder?
Oh, it was great. His band was so hot. Mitch was so good up front and had that blue-eyed soul voice. They were so popular so quickly. And Johnny, the drummer, Johnny Badanjek, he was fabulous. He's still a friend of mine, and he was a terrific drummer. I've seen him through the years, you know, at different events. He came to our induction. I mean, he's just a great guy. Mitch, yeah, there was an attraction. You know, we had a mutual admiration society going on. So we hung out. You know, we'd see each other at the bars and stuff, and we played gigs with him besides that one. So, yeah. What can I say?
Patty, again, I'm going to call you out on the gossip mat here, because here you are being, oh, so coy. There was a kind of a mutual attraction. You're talking Mitch Ryder, and you're talking Patty Quatro, who was as hot as all get out. So you did briefly mention in the second season, I at least got that out of you, it's that you and Mitch did date, even if it was briefly. So please tell us a little bit more. Elaborate, my dear.
Fiery minds want to know. It was a few times, you know, we would see each other at bars and hang out, and it just went further. It was not some huge romance thing, but we were definitely attracted, definitely. And he was a hot commodity back then. He looked good up front. He did his thing. Yeah, I was attracted. Absolutely.
Well, you said in one of the episodes about the Hideout, I believe it was Horny Teens in a Sweatbox, that episode, that you said that you didn't really date any of your homeboys because you wanted to keep that separate.
Ooh. Busted. I had my crushes. Oh, my God. Scott, get in here and help me. Oh, my God. I had a crush on one of the drummers in a band, Mitch. Trying to think of who else. I had some other boyfriends that weren't in the bands. So it just depended on who we were playing with and what was going on. But as I said before, I was a little more quiet, serious, and not so quick to embrace the generational thing of women going a little more wild. So I was slower at all that. But of course I had my boyfriends, and you know, I guess you call them hookups or whatever, but it was few and far between at that point. I had to be really interested.
Okay, well, I'm going to let you off the hook briefly, momentarily, because the Scott that you're referring to is none other than Scott Richardson of The Chosen Few and SRC and also The Fugitives. I'm mixing all the chronology up. And he's also a dear friend, and he also played with all of you. And he also hooked up with Nan Ball, and we will hear those stories. Mm. So he's got the insider scoop of all the things about you and the pleasure seekers that you're unwilling to talk about. So Scott Richardson, I can't wait.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Well, you know, it escalates. We're going to have a wild ride. I mean, it is sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And, you know, things happened as the decade wore on. I mean, things got looser. It was that era. So we'll have plenty to talk about.
Oh, yes, we will.
Oh, I know. You won't let me get off the hook.
Never.
Hey, hey, all right. Jump up. Get it. Hey.
Devil with a bluegrass, bluegrass, bluegrass. Devil with a bluegrass song.
Ooh, yeah.
Devil with a bluegrass, bluegrass, bluegrass. Devil with a bluegrass song.
Beep, beep, bye, bye, bo, bo, bum. Look at Molly now, here she come. Wearing a wig, hat, and shades to match. Got a high-heeled shoes and an alligator hat. Wearing pearls and a diamond ring. Got brave, but so a finger and everything. Devil with a blue dress on. She's a devil with a blue dress on. No, help her say. Chanel number 5. Got to be the finest girl alive. You walk real cool, catches everybody's eye. Got to be nervous, I can't say hi. Not too skinny, she's not too fat. She's a real pump jinger and I like them like that. Devil with a blue red, blue red stone. She's a devil with a blue red stone. Hey, I say now. Devil with a blue dress, blue red stone. Yeah, the devil with a blue red stone. I'm a call from the early morning to the early, early night. You see Miss Molly rocking at the house of blue light. Good golly, Miss Molly. You sure like a ball. Oh, yeah, you're rocking and you're rolling. Can't you hear your mama call? It's on a finger now and everything.
Devil with a blue dress, blue dress on. The devil with a blue dress on.
I love that devil with the blue dress. All right, gonna sock it to me now.
Devil with the blue dress on.
Got to jump up now. Got to be there.